afternoon, and welcome to Cresta in the Afternoon, where we get to talk about the things that matter most. My name is Dr. Edward Peters. I'm sitting in. I'm honored, and I'm humbled to be sitting in for Al Cresta, who's on vacation this week. I don't know where Al went. I don't know where he and Sally have gone to, but my guess is Al probably pulled out a map, put pin stickers in it and said, which towns have the biggest libraries in it? That's where I'm headed. All you have to do is look around Al's studio here, and you could basically run a graduate seminar in Catholic political current events from it. So this next couple of hours, we're going to be talking in the model that Al has left us, that is about the things that matter most. And after the news, I'll be back with an overview of our incoming guests today. We have both studio guests and telephone interviews set up for you today. But first, we're going to turn to the news with Nick Tom.
Thank you very much, Ed, and welcome everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News on Tuesday, June 17th. After years of legal battles, gay couples are lining up to say, I do, in the state of California. Many protesters showed up at the first same-sex wedding in Los Angeles today. The state's Supreme Court last month overturned a law banning gay marriage in California, but now voters plan to put the issue on the November ballot. It will call for a state constitutional amendment that would define marriages between one man and one woman. A simple majority is needed to make that constitutional. In related news, also in November, Floridians will be asked if they want a gay marriage ban written into their state constitution. Florida already has a legislative ban on gay marriage, but supporters of writing a ban into the Constitution say this would better protect Florida against lawsuits and the kind of judicial activism that was seen in California. U.S. Senator Bill Nelson says the amendment would do more than keep the state out of lawsuits. Nelson says the amendment would hurt heterosexual couples living together because it would ban any kind of sharing of property between people who are not married. 60% of voters would have to cast ballots for the amendment in order for the ban to be written into the Constitution. There are concerns up to two dozen levees could fail between the Illinois and Iowa Quad Cities area and St. Louis, Missouri in the next few days. One levee has already breached in Gulfport, Illinois. The Illinois governor has activated 400 more National Guard troops to assist with flooding efforts and sandbagging. Major flooding in southern Missouri is expected, with the floodwaters predicted to crest sometime on Thursday. Controversial Catholic priest Father Michael Flager has returned to his position at St. Sabina Parish on Chicago's South Side. Perry Williams has more.
Father Flager says he's grateful to be back after a two-week suspension from Cardinal George, but he does not plan to stop speaking out about important issues.
You cannot, I don't believe, be Catholic and not be an activist. That's the gospel.
Father Flager was punished for a sermon he gave at Trinity United Church of Christ last month, in which he mocked Senator Hillary Clinton. The sermon caused a nationwide uproar and led presumptive Democratic presidential nominee, Senator Barack Obama, to leave Trinity after more than 20 years as a member. Flager has apologized for the language he used during that sermon. Perry Williams, Chicago.
You heard my interview with Dick Thompson of the Thomas More Law Center yesterday regarding the court-martial of Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Chassani. And today, Military Judge Colonel Stephen Folsom dismissed all charges against Chassani on the grounds of unlawful command influence. He blistered the prosecution's case in an opinion he read from the bench that lasted an hour. The ruling was greeted with tears of joy from Chassani's wife and family. Thompson said today, quote, "We are all grateful for the judge's ruling. He truly was the last sentinel to guard against unlawful command influence. Tragically, our own government eliminated one of its most effective combat commanders. The insurgents are laughing in their caves," end quote. The Da Vinci Code film prequel is already stirring up controversy. The Vatican has banned filming on angels and demons from two Rome churches that filmmakers had requested permission to film from, saying the movie is incompatible with church teaching. Catholic League President Bill Donahue says such a move should have been expected.
They were able to take aerial shots of Castle Gandolfo, the Pope's retreat place for Da Vinci Code. I'm sure Ron Howard will come up with something, but he shouldn't be surprised that the Vatican is going to say, no, you're not exactly welcome given your pedigree.
Those behind the movie have requested permission to film inside two Rome churches where key scenes in Angels and Demons, which is based on the book by Dan Brown, are set. Both the Italian government and the Vatican needed to grant the permits, but the Vatican refused. Shooting on the flick began in Rome on June 5th. And now your fascinating fact for the day. The most popular recipients of Valentine's cards are school teachers. Reporting for Ave Maria Radio News, I'm Nick Tom. Now back to Cresta in the Afternoon with guest host Dr. Ed Peters.
Good afternoon. afternoon again. You know, there's no such thing as a dull day in the Catholic Church. Even though today is liturgically a rather quiet day, there's no famous saint, there's no famous feast day being marked today. Days like today are full of church history. They're full of activities. They're full of opportunities for us to deepen our faith, to learn more about it, and to put it into action. I see a note here from Al. He said, June 17th, remind the people that it was 335 years ago today that Father Jacques Marquette first put his paddle into the Mississippi River and began to explore that mighty waterway. What do we hear today? We hear about the threat the river poses to millions of people up and down its length. I'm an old St. Louis boy, so I know the history of the river pretty well. And I want to commend all the people, the Iowa, Illinois, Missourians, and so on, who are facing the threat. Second time in 15 years that they've had the so-called once-in-a-century flood. So let's keep them in our prayers. G.K. Chesterton was once invited to a party, and he was met at the door by the hostess, and the hostess said, "You're very welcome, Mr. Chesterton. It's a pleasure to have you here, but this is a polite gathering, and we don't want to talk about controversial things. In particular, we don't want to talk about religion, and we don't want to talk about politics." And Chesterton looked the kindly lady in the eye, and he said, "My dear, religion and politics are the only two things worth talking about." Well, that's what we get to do on Crested in the Afternoon. If you just limit our topics to religion and politics, that is, to faith and current events, well, we can more than use up our 2 hours here. For example, today we're on the Internet surfing the news stations, and what do we see? We see that the retired Cardinal of Tokyo, Bishop Shirin Yanagi, who is already retired from Tokyo, but he turned 80 years old today. That means, as a member of the College of Cardinals, he no longer has the right to vote in a papal election. With his superannuation, that means there's now four openings in the College of Cardinals. Now, if there's anything that Catholics and politicians like to watch, it's the College of Cardinals, because, as you know, their position is much more significant than just an honorary one. They just don't look good in those red vestments. They also have primary responsibilities for advising and advising the Holy See and representing the Church throughout the world. Now, papal elections are limited to 120 cardinals. Yes, we know John Paul II many times exceeded that number, but he's Pope. He gets to do that if he wants. But generally, ever since Paul VI, the number of electors has been limited to 120. All the signs are that Benedict XVI is going to stick much closer to that number, which means the next time he has a conclave, that is when he appoints new members of the College of Cardinals, if it were to happen today, he would limit himself to four appointments. Well, it would be fascinating to speculate on who some of those candidates might be. We could, for example, look at relative representations of various nations in the College of Cardinals. And the two countries I watch closest, of course, are the United States, I'm an American, of course, and Italy. Interesting in that they both have roughly the same population percentages of Catholics. Both of them represent about 5% of the Catholic Church. Now, as an American, I'm a little put out that Italy gets to have 20 cardinals and the United States only has 13. So I'd like to speculate a little bit from time to time on who some of those most likely American candidates to be raised to the College of Cardinals might be. Well, your guess, I'm sure, is as good as mine. But certainly a few names come to mind. Bishop O'Brien, Archbishop O'Brien in Baltimore, Archbishop Worrell in D.C., Archbishop Chaput in Denver. All of these are men who have very important sees, have the spiritual responsibility for millions of Catholics under their care, and all of them have unique histories and areas of responsibility that they bring special expertise to. One particular story, and I have to stress, this is just a rumor at this point, and nevertheless, we want you to help to understand not just the news, but also some of the rumors about the news that go on in the Catholic Church. But one of the names that's being bantered about lately for being raised to the College of Cardinals is the Archbishop of St. Louis, Raymond Burke. The St. Louis Archdiocese, of course, typically has had a cardinal archbishop for most of the 20th century, and on those grounds alone, Archbishop Burke certainly would be worthy of consideration. It's a very important see there in the Midwest, a very historic see. Also, Archbishop Burke has been outspoken in his defense of Catholic discipline, particularly the exercise of canon law, the judicious application of canon law to several troublesome situations he's faced. But as I scan the Catholic blogs today, the most intriguing rumor that I see is the possibility that Archbishop Burke might shortly be named to take over the presidency of the Apostolic Signatura. Now, the judicial system of the Catholic Church has really two supreme courts. It has the Roman Rota, which is the more famous. When you hear about Rota judges and the Pope's annual address to the Roman Rota, you can understand that these are significant judicial bodies. But there's a second court in the Catholic Church, and it's called the Signatura, more of an administrative law court. If Archbishop Burke were to be asked to come to Rome to take over the Signatura, it would almost assuredly make him the 14th American cardinal. There are currently 13. He would become the 14th. And in a lot of ways, such an appointment would be a ringing endorsement of the bishop's firm commitment to the exercise of law in the church. Archbishop Burke was at one time he worked on the Signatura for a number of years as defender of the bond and so on as a judicial officer. And then, of course, he went to the Diocese of La Crosse in Wisconsin and after La Crosse to St. Louis. So he's got extensive pastoral experience. And he also has, and I'd like to use a word that has been kind of discredited recently in the last several years, and that is he also has a wellspring of piety. Piety's taken a bad knock in our generation. It comes across as kind of a mealy-mouthed, whimpering type of spirituality. Actually, the Roman tradition of piety is very noble, very manly, very mature. And there's nothing more edifying than a man of Archbishop Burke's erudition, of his canonical accomplishments, to be leading the rosary on his knees, to be marching with pro-lifers before abortion clinics, to be honoring images of Our Lady of Guadalupe and the Sacred Heart. So all you have to do is say, you know, open the calendar to any day. Today's June 17th. Open the calendar to any day. Turn on the news for 5 minutes, and you're going to find issues that are significant and important for us as Catholics. I want to talk a little bit about today's guests, give you a little heads up on them, because they are some fascinating gentlemen today. If around these interviews we have a little time to go back and talk some canon law, I'd be happy to do that. And I want to make sure I give the number out to you, because all three of these guests are going to be the type of people that are going to provoke questions in your mind, questions in your hearts. And they're here not just to explain what they do and what they're interested in, but how their work makes a difference in the lives of Catholics. So we have toll-free numbers here at Cresta in the Afternoon. The numbers are 877-573-7825. That's a toll-free number to reach us here at Cresta in the Afternoon. Again, it's 877-573-7825. In our first hour today, we're going to be talking first with Dr. Daniel Keating. Dr. Daniel Keating is an assistant professor of Scripture at Sacred Heart Major Seminary, where I teach. Dr. Keating did his undergraduate work right here in Ann Arbor at the University of Michigan, where he was a history major, and then he went off to Sacred Heart Major Seminary in Detroit, Michigan, to work on a master's degree in theology. Following that, however, he knew he wanted to go on for doctoral studies. He had done brilliantly in his academic career through that point. He decided to go across the Atlantic to Oxford University, where he did his doctoral work in theology obviously Oxford's not being a Catholic school, but at a prestigious, internationally recognized theological faculty, where he took his doctorate. Since that time, he's been very active in writing, teaching, publishing. And a little later, I'll give you a list of some of those books. But we're not going to be talking to Dr. Keating about his academic prowess, although that would be a fascinating interview as well. Instead, we're going to be talking to Dr. Keating about the witness of his life. Dr. Keating is a member of a very interesting organization called the Servants of the Word. The Servants of the Word, it's an international organization of men who are committed to living the celibate life, but without seeking either religious consecration or holy orders. It's a fascinating way of offering something significant to the Lord without seeking holy orders or without the many benefits of religious or consecrated life. When Dr. Keating is here, and he'll be here in just a few minutes, when he's here, we're going to be talking about what kind of witness, what are the scriptural witnesses of this life that's committed to singleness in the Lord? What does that teach those of us who are married? What does it teach those of us who are already priests or religious? How does a young man in particular know whether this is the type of life that the Lord might be calling him to? What's the history of the single life? How has the church used it over the eons, over the centuries? So Dr. Keating's going to be with us to talk about all of these things. If you want to look ahead to the second hour, I'll give you a quick heads up on the second hour. We're going to be talking in a very different vein to Father Todd Lajeunesse, who's the Dean of Studies at Sacred Heart Major Seminary in Detroit, and we're going to be giving him an impossible task. We're going to be giving him the task of describing or giving us a profile of the typical seminarian. We know, of course, there's no such thing as a typical seminarian. He's going to tell us what one looks like anyway. And then finally, we're going to have a very special guest. You'll permit me to reserve his name for just a minute, but we're going to be talking about the world of Catholic youth blogging. Is it just for fun, or is it really making a difference?
From real estate to plumbing, from pet care to dentistry, Catholic business professionals are finding increased business when advertising with the Catholic Business Pages. For more information about advertising or to get your free copy, go to CatholicBusinessPages.com or call 734-930-4536. Get better results when you advertise. That's CatholicBusinessPages.com or call 734-930-4536. CatholicBusinessPages.com is brought to you this week by Sterling Cleaning Services, serving Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb counties for over 21 years. Sterling Cleaning Services offers complete janitorial services. From windows to floors, inside and out, we do it all. We service commercial businesses, industrial and medical buildings, schools, construction sites, and more. Call Sterling Cleaning Services today at 1-800-453-1165. That's 1-800-453-1165. CatholicBusinessPages.com, your best choice. Summer can be a bummer when your car's on the fritz. You'd like to take a vacation, but when you start your engine, it goes instead of. You'd love to take a road trip, but your brakes are broken, your muffler won't, and your differential is, well, indifferent. You can't even drive to the corner store without your pistons getting in a brawl. The good news is Fozzy Auto Repair can unfritz the fritzes. In other words, they'll battle the boink, unbroke the brakes, muzzle the muffler, differentiate the differential, and bench the offending pistons. Remember, Fozzy's is the home of the $17.99 oil change and free maintenance exams at 30, 60, and 90,000 miles. Avoid the summer bummer, and don't hit the road this summer until your car is unfritzed and ready. Take it to Fozzy's Auto Repair. It's your car, their reputation. Stop and see them on Stadium just south of Jackson Road or call toll-free 800-895-8700. That's 800-895-8700.
welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon. My name is Dr. Edward Peters. I'm sitting in for Al Cresta, who's on vacation this week. Let me tell you, I've been a guest of Al's, I don't know how many times over the last 10 years, beginning back when I was working for the Diocese of San Diego in California. Al would call me for telephone interviews on annulments and church law and so on. Then when we relocated, of course, here to the to Michigan, I've been honored to be his guest a number of times. But every time until today, I got to sit on the other side of the table. And sitting on this side of the table, trying to keep track of all the things that Al has to keep track of, let me tell you, I'm coming away with a much deeper appreciation of the already fine job that he does. A few weeks ago, many of our listeners might recall, the Diocese of Lansing in Michigan received a new bishop, Earl Boyer. And Al invited me to come and do commentary on the installation mass with him. And that was, as much as I enjoyed that, and as a terrific opportunity it was to explain the liturgical significance of the Mass in general and an Episcopal installation, I was very taken aback by how many things Al and Nick Tom and his crew have to keep track of. And unfortunately, I guess Al really enjoyed his afternoon with us, because as soon as he goes on vacation, he says, "Hey, Ed, how'd you like to come sit in on a show?" And I'm thinking, sure, piece of cake, right? Well, with your patience and a little help from the Holy Spirit, I think we'll do an acceptable job here today. While we're waiting for Dr. Keating, I would like to spend a few minutes with you talking about canon law, the legal system of the Catholic Church. Why canon law? Well, besides the fact that I teach it at Sacred Heart Major Seminary in Detroit, the reason I went into canon law and the reason why it's important for us to have a working knowledge of it is that canon law touches, to one degree or another, virtually every aspect of our life as Catholics. Anybody who went to eighth grade in the United States had their state constitution class, so they know that there's an executive branch and a judicial branch and a legislative branch, and they know that bills turn into laws if they get signed by governors and so on. We have, as American citizens and as citizens of all the nations that are listening to Cresta in the Afternoon, we know we've got a civil legal system. We prefer to avoid dealing with it. I mean, who wants to find out what the fine on a traffic ticket is, or how much it costs to file a suit for a breach of contract? Who wants to deal with all those things? We're lucky if we can handle our taxes once a year. But we're still aware as citizens of the state that there is a legal system out there available to us to serve us, that it covers a wide variety of things in our daily life. What we have less awareness of is that there is a legal system in the Catholic Church. That legal system is, in fact, much, much older than any of the laws we ever confront in the individual states or the United States. And it has a much deeper and richer and spiritually significant history for all of us. If you're interested in delving more into the legal system of the Catholic Church, let me unabashedly recommend my own website to you. It's called canonlaw.info, www.canonlaw.info. And it's pretty much a good one-stop place to go to for a basic orientation to just how the legal system of the Catholic Church works. We're not going to spend a lot of time trying to explain those details with you today. Instead, I want to look at a couple of current events that are going on that, if you follow Catholic blogs at all, if you follow Catholic news, if you listen to shows like Al Cresta, you're going to hear about news stories almost on a daily basis that deal in one way or another with canon law. And because canon law is the legal system of the Catholic Church, you're going to confront issues that have an impact in society. Let's take one example just off the wires today. A story from Viterbo, Italy, where a paraplegic man was denied the opportunity to marry in the Catholic Church. Okay, now that's going to get everyone's attention. This sounds immediately like some kind of retrograde discrimination against disabled people. It wasn't his fault. He was in a car accident, etc. My guess is that the bishop there, in Viterbo, Italy, is going to take a lot of criticism for this decision. And as Catholics, I think it would behoove all of us to be a little bit more aware of what the law and the theology of Catholic marriage is so that we can understand his decision. This is not the first time such a case has come up. My impression, having watched these cases roughly for about 30 years now, is that they come up about every 10 years or so. Now, in a nutshell, let me say that the same kind of society that doesn't see anything wrong with same-sex marriage reacts quite adversely to the prohibition of marriage of those who are unable to engage in the marital act. That's an example, I think, of how the Church, if we give it a chance to explain her position, the Church ends up being 100% correct on both these points, and the world ends up missing the boat on both of them. How so? How are these two apparently very different types of cases related? They're related like this. The Catholic Church, as the expounder of natural law, as the custodian of the revelation of Jesus Christ, and the revelation of Jesus Christ, knows that marriage is ordered to two things. It's ordered to the good of the spouses and the procreation and education of children. If we know in advance that either of those two things cannot be accomplished, then we know that that attempted relationship cannot achieve what both natural law and Christian theology want to see in a marriage. So the same logic that has the Church oppose so-called same-sex marriage also opposes having weddings for people who cannot achieve children. Now, we could make a little distinction here. We're not talking about sterility cases, and that's a different part of the law. But in just the little bit of time there, I want to show you that you will be seeing on a regular basis, as soon as you're aware of it, you're going to be seeing on a regular basis news stories that deal with Catholic law and theology that the world is going to take a very different view from than the Church can. My advice is let the Church explain her position and see how cogent it ends.
Electric, cable bill. Uh-oh, here's something from the mortgage company.
What do they want?
I don't know. The index that your interest rate is based on has changed. As a result, your payment will adjust from $895 to $1,216.12.
What?
The new payment does not include taxes and insurance.
This is a notice no homeowner wants to get. But unfortunately, this sort of bad news is exactly what a lot of homeowners are opening. You don't need a notice like that. Call Kent Town and Fellowship Home Lending today and get something like this.
Again, for giving us the opportunity to serve your home loan needs. I know that your adjustable rate mortgage was putting a lot of stress on you and your family. Your new fixed rate mortgage with a lower monthly payment gives you stability and peace of mind.
You got that right.
Whether your budget is weighed down by too much debt or it's simply out of control, call the people who believe in lending to your neighbor as yourself at Fellowship Home Lending. Dial 1-800-660-6433. That's 1-800-660-6433.
Hi, this is Father John Ricardo, inviting you to join me as we explore some of the deepest questions that arise in our hearts, questions that shape the way we think, the way we speak, and the way we live. For all of these questions, Christ is the answer.
In January 2008, the Order of Malta sponsored a faith conference entitled Knowing Christ Jesus. Father Ricardo spoke. His title was Teaching Us How to Pray. The Holy Father reflects on the Our Father. We'll hear this talk on our next program. Listen to Christ is the Answer, Wednesday evenings at 8, Saturday afternoons at 5, and Sunday mornings at 11 on 990 WDEL, 1440 WMAX, and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the image of the invisible God. He points us to our destiny. He reveals the dignity of the human person. He is the one who makes known the Father. Christ is the Answer.
Christ is the Answer is brought to you by the Ave Maria Communications Guild.
Thank you.
welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon. My name is Dr. Edward Peters. I'm from Sacred Heart Major Seminary in Detroit, where I hold the Edmund Cardinal Shaka Chair. You know, at the top of the hour, we were talking about ecclesiastical politics and the possibility of some new American cardinals. We mentioned one American archbishop who may be going to Rome. We'll see about that. But to speak of Cardinal Shaka, there's an American cardinal who just retired from a very important position at Rome, namely Cardinal Shaka, who was the president of the Vatican City State. He's in charge of all the relations between the Holy See and the government of Italy, the administration of that smallest nation on earth, which is the Vatican City State. So Americans are no stranger to ecclesiastical service here and abroad. And just the memory of some of the names of the people that we carry on our work for is enough to instill, I think, at least I hope, a healthy humility in us and a constant effort to strive to do our jobs as well as possible. We're about ready to start talking with Dr. Keating again. Just to recap my introduction, Dr. Keating is a professor of Sacred Scripture at Sacred Heart Major Seminary in Detroit. He has a bachelor's degree from the University of Michigan, his master's degree in theology from Sacred Heart Seminary, and his doctorate from Oxford University in England. But what we're as fascinating as it would be to discuss scripture with him, I think I'll leave someone like Al or Steve Ray, who's going to be guest hosting tomorrow, men who know scripture inside and out. I think I'll let them carry on a scripture interview. I want to talk with Dr. Keating before you about the particular witness that he and his community, the servants of the word, are giving in regard to the single life. Is the single life itself a vocation, or is it the lack of a vocation? Is there a way to consecrate one's singlehood, to give up, to promise to give up the exercise of the rite of marriage, but particularly for men, not with the intention of going on for holy orders, not with the intention of going on to the religious life, as noble and as splendid as both those lives are, but rather to plumb the mysteries of the single life itself as an opportunity to serve the Lord. With us now is Dr. Dan Keating. Dr. Keating, welcome. Thanks so much for being with us.
Great to be with you, Ed.
Tell us a little bit. Give us just an overview of what the servants of the word are.
Servants of the word are a consecrated lay brotherhood. We had our origins back in around 1970, actually in Ann Arbor, Michigan, right in this part of the world.
Started right here in Ann Arbor.
It did start right in Ann Arbor. It was part of the outgrowth of, at the time, of Catholic Charismatic Renewal, and was part of a response to what the Spirit of God was doing then and calling. As I think often happened, one of the things I've seen at is I've had a chance to visit around different movements in the churches to see how much the Spirit has acted in distinct ways and yet similar ways in lots of different places. And I look and I say, well, a lot of what was going on with us was also going on with them. So I think this was a season and a time when the Spirit of God was moving to bring about and renew various kinds of vocations, but this is one of them. And I think it's one that often gets overlooked between, you might say, the taller buildings of marriage on the one hand and priesthood on the other.
That's a good analogy. It does get overlooked. Why is that?
Well, very good question. I think I would give this as a first answer. I think particularly in our age, there has been an increased appreciation for the married life. I think a much deeper theology of the married life.
Okay.
As well as because of all the crisis of single families, a desire to invest greatly in the married life and recognize that it doesn't just happen easily, but it needs a great amount of investment.
So in other words, some of the improvements that we've seen in the dignity of marriage may have come inadvertently at the expense of appreciating the single life in its own right.
Well, in a sense, inadvertently maybe of crowding it out. Marriage, I think, has both suffered greatly because of the breakdown of our society, and it's benefited from a very deep theology over the last few decades. On the other hand, you have a great crisis in terms of at least somewhat of a crisis of priesthood and of the need for the church to call men forth into priesthood. So where celibacy has had anyone's interested in celibacy, of course the great need is priesthood. And so the orientation then is, if there's a celibate inclination, priesthood is the obvious answer because of the need of the church. And because of that, I think the particular vocation to, especially for men who could go on to priesthood but need not, of lay consecrated celibacy, it tends to get overshadowed between the two.
That's one of the things, Dr. Keating, that I, speaking as a man who's called neither to the single life nor to priesthood, I've been struck as I've learned about your community over the last few years, that just as there's a crisis in celibacy within the priesthood, now, all sorts of challenges to it in the Western Church, that celibacy among laity is taking root in your as expressed in your organization and some others like it.
That's right.
Almost as if there's a spiritual counterbalancing.
Right. And what I once had a good friend of ours who was a priest. We were enjoying some time together and talking about these things, and he said to me in rather profound way, he said, you know, in one sense, your celibacy speaks more with greater clarity than my own, simply because people know that celibacy just comes along with priesthood. If you want to be a priest, you have to be celibate. But you're doing it not because you want to be a priest, but just because God's called you to this state of life. And so it sharpens the particular focus on the celibate vocation as a given way to love God and love others.
One of the fascinating insights into this, I saw maybe a year or so ago, I was reading some of the early works of Edward Schillebeck's, of course, translated. I don't read Dutch or German that well. But he said back in the early 1960s, he foresaw a crisis in celibacy in the Western Church coming. Mm-hmm. He foresaw that. Mm-hmm. And he said that one of the things driving it was the loss of the appreciation of celibacy outside of priesthood. That, for example, in the 17th, 18th, 19th centuries, you had this almost paradigmatic model of the English bachelor. Remember My Fair Lady, you know?
Right.
Right, the two men committed to the single life and so on. And it's a plot point for Shaw's play. But nevertheless, he was reflecting something that was really recognized in society, that the single life, the celibate life, the committed to single life style was honorable and respectable in its own right. And Schillebeck said in the 1960s that had virtually disappeared from Western society. And he said it's going to have repercussions for priesthood. I think, for the reasons you just outlined, that celibacy becomes understood simply as just a tag to priesthood, rather than, and forgive me quoting canon law here, rather than a gift to be valued in its own right.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about the membership of Servants of the Word. My first question right off the bat is, are all these men Catholic?
No, we're very unusual that way. Most of the groups that have sprung up, and I was actually just visiting another one out in Colorado that I didn't know about, that comes from a renewal movement called the Christian Life Movement. They've got a group of celibate men, lay consecrated men. Ours is rather unusual in that from our very beginning, not only we were largely a group of Catholics, but in the movement that was going on, a set of Protestants were also joining, and over the years, some Orthodox have also looked into our life. And so we have an ecumenical constitution. That is, we're probably about 80 or 85% Catholic, something like that. But we've got a good number of Protestants here, and also we have a house in the United Kingdom where there are some Protestant men as well, who said, effectively, I think I'm supposed to live this call with you.
And fascinating. Yeah. The Spirit's going to blow where he wants, huh?
Yeah. No one planned that. No one, and we've sort of made it up as we've gone. You know, it's not something that there are a lot of blueprints for.
No, I guess not.
No.
Now, you mentioned houses here. You mentioned houses in England. How many countries are we talking about here?
We've got houses here in Michigan. We're in Ann Arbor. We've got a center in Chelsea. We've also got a house in Lansing, and then another in Detroit, not too far from Wayne State. We have a house in Monterrey, Mexico, and then a house in Belfast in London, and finally a couple of houses in Manila in the Philippines. So we've got, 4 different countries, course, Belfast and London are both part of the United Kingdom, but obviously England and Ireland are two different
nations. I've got more questions for you, Dr. Keating, but we invited callers, and so I want to make sure we get to them, too. Terry? Go ahead, Terry.
Hello.
Ypsilanti.
Hello, this is Terry.
Hi, Terry.
I have two questions for you. One is, you alluded to the fact that the Servants of the Word is an ecumenical organization with an ecumenical constitution. And I have two questions for you. One is, how do you live out your lives in fidelity to the church while maintaining ecumenical standards that especially would require a certain amount of respect and support for Protestant ideas and teachings that are not in conformity to the teachings of the Catholic Church? And the second part is what kind of oversight is there within the Catholic Church for your organization, and what authority does the bishop of the diocese or Rome play in any oversight of your group?
Good questions, Terry. Thank you.
Yeah, excellent questions. To the first one, we have a very strong conviction that the various men who are part of us also need to be able to live in integrity according to their own church tradition and their own church teaching. And so we both not only allow but profoundly encourage that the men participate in the life of their church in a way that's fitting and appropriate. What that means is that we need to leave space and room in our life for the various men to participate, whether they're as Catholics in a parish or Protestants or Orthodox in their local church. It also means that we've tried to adopt one of the principles that comes from the church's teaching on ecumenism, and that is that we're not just looking to kind of live the lowest common denominator life together. We're actually looking to put in common as much as we can where it's possible. We can't put everything in common because we're not in full communion. We've got a very partial but only imperfect communion. So we can put in common only so much, but we do make an effort to put in common as much as we can within what the church, the various churches allow. So we operate fairly clearly by the standards that the church would set for ecumenical practice, and have worked out a way to do that in our own life.
Terry, second question was, what kind of ecclesiastical supervision, specifically for the Catholic members of Servants, are there?
Sure. We have talked both with bishops locally, and we've been in discussion with the Council for Laity at various points in Rome. One of the things that they've said to us is there is no way, and Ed, you would know this as well as anyone, there's no way presently in canon law for the church to approve an ecumenical association as such. And so what it can approve is something that's specifically Catholic. For instance, in Manila, we are all Catholic there because it's a Catholic country. We're all Catholic members. And we've got local approval there by the bishop as a lay association of the faithful. Where we are ecumenical here in the States and in Europe, we don't have official approval because that at this point is impossible given our ecumenical constitution. And what we mainly do is we both have advisors, we've had advisors look over our ecumenical approaches, come and visit us and give counsel, and we've been in regular touch, for instance, with the Bishop of Lansing and his office over the years, letting him know what we're doing and how things are going and keeping in touch.
It sounds like, Dr. Keene, sounds like a case of examine everything and keep what's good. This is a rather new idea, not so much the celibacy, but the ecumenical aspect of celibacy. So examine it, see how it goes, see where it leads. My impression of what I've read, and by the way, let me recommend people contact Sacred Heart Major Seminary and ask for a copy of the Mosaic Magazine. Mosaic Magazine, published by Sacred Heart Seminary. And I think it was the winter 2006. The staff will know which one it is, where they did a very interesting profile of you and the community there. But as I read through that, my impression was this is something new in the church, for the church, and the church will certainly examine it and keep what's good about it. Let me give out that number again to call toll-free here to Cresta in the afternoon, 877-573-7825. And we're speaking with Dr. Daniel Keating, who's a member of the Servants of the Word community. Now, you're not the only Keating, as I recall, who's a member of the Servant of the Word. Who else is there?
My older brother John is right now our acting superior, the one we've elected to oversee us at this time, and he's 6 years my elder.
And has he been in the community longer than you two?
He has about that many years longer. He started as when he was at university back in the 70s, and paved the way in many ways for my own. Contact with the community.
Now, I imagine it goes without saying that Servants of the Word is not simply something you drop in at one day and say, I'd like to try this. You know, there's a period of formation discernment, is there not?
That's right. There is.
Okay.
Indeed. We have, we adopt a form that's, I think, typical to many such groups. For young men looking at our life, we often have a period of affiliation. That would be a matter of visiting, coming over to some events, on retreats, getting to know our life a bit. At some point, if there's more serious interest, a man would move in and spend perhaps a year living with us. And then at some point, if there's more serious interest, we do live a life fully in common. That is, we effectively live the evangelical councils. We have our possessions together. Within the limits of an ecumenical life, we have an ordered life together, and we have a commitment to a certain form of simplicity. And so a man would then come in common and enter a period of a few years of formation that involves living our life, going through some instruction, and coming through that and going through a period of making a one-year commitment, and then finally, after adequate time, being able to make a lifelong commitment to our life.
And these commitments, they sound like they resemble the canonical vow, then.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like the closest description. And for our listeners, there's an important difference between a promise and a vow. A promise you mm-hmm. make to another person. A vow is a form of promise, but it's a promise made to God.
Right.
So when one promises community life here or promises celibate life, that's a promise made to God, and it's to God that you can turn for the strength and the inspiration and so on to live that life. What kind of works, Doctor, what kind of works are the men engaged in?
Mm-hmm. We have primarily been involved in various forms of youth and university work over the years. We have run and continue to run various forms of student outreaches. We have one at the University of Michigan. We run something at the University of London. We're involved in Manila and in Monterrey in the same way. So we've consistently worked in the high school university arena. And really there our work is to work with young men and women to bring them to encounter the living Christ, to come into the knowledge of him, to set them, as we say, on a road of radical lifelong discipleship in Christ and to be open to whatever vocations he would be calling them to. We've also been involved in various forms of teaching. We have a few of our men teaching at an inner-city school in Detroit at Cornerstone Schools. And so, though we don't run a school, we've also often been involved in teaching. In addition, we have some of our brothers work in the outside occupations. And one of the ways we support ourselves is with some of the men who are particularly good at things like engineering or computer software. Who we have a small company ourselves, and we have some brothers that work in other companies. And that works overall fairly well for our life, and it provides a way also to have contact just with normal people, as it were, and be out there in the working world as well. It helps to finance our life.
Do some of your, do you call them brothers?
We do.
Do some of the brothers pursue advanced education,
mm-hmm.
or are they pretty much done with that by the time they see you?
No, actually, one of the things we often have our brothers do after a time of formation, if it seems right, is pursue something at the level of a master's in theology.
Okay.
Partly for personal growth and for understanding, but also because it's helped a lot of the brothers engage in various kinds of service and make a contribution at various levels. A few of us have gone on for doctoral work. I think we've got We've got four of our brothers who've got doctorates in theology.
It doesn't sound like anybody's allowed just to sit around and think nice thoughts. It sounds like they're working, they're in school, or they're in evangelization projects.
Yeah. We're definitely an active group, and we keep pretty active and busy, and I think that's right. Yeah.
We're slowly headed toward a break, but I want to ask a question on behalf of those who may consciously or even unconsciously have been thinking about this kind of life. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask the same question of you that I'll ask in the next hour of Father Lajeunesse. How does a young man know if this kind of life might be for him? And if he's thinking it is, what's the first steps he should take?
Sure. Well, I think the key thing for young people is to make space in their lives for God to act. In our university work, one of the things we have found so helpful over the years is to encourage students, as they're going about their studies, as they're going about perhaps early careers, to really make space for God. And what does that mean? I think it means if you have some sense you might be called to some kind of celibate commitment, in setting aside relationships that you might pursue consciously and actively, and taking the steps that actually makes that possible, so that you carve out time for prayer, you carve out time to be with others who are considering that way of life, and I think you take time and make space for God. And then if you have an inkling that you should pursue perhaps priesthood or some form of celibate brotherhood or some other consecrated life, begin to actually take steps to consider that, live it out. There is a kind of testing that goes on, but you need space, first of all, space to hear, space to pray. Without that space, it's very difficult to hear, and you'll go right by the opportunity. So it's making the time and space, and I think taking then the first steps toward a particular call or vocation that you feel inclined toward.
That sounds like an approachable model. I can imagine there's a lot of people out there that would think, oh, maybe I'm called to this, but I'm afraid to take those first steps.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound to me, though, like an inquiry is anything like a commitment, that it's rather an opportunity for you to sit down with them and describe the life in a little more detail, a little more personal exchange.
Right.
And as you say, make space for God, and in a sense make space for themselves too, to think about this with an open mind.
And I also think people do come with a lot of pressure that if they take any kind of step, somehow they're committed or they'll get stuck. And in fact, any group is going to want to make sure that it's really right for the person to enter into this. So no one's going to let anyone quickly get stuck in something they're not really called to. And I think people can come with great confidence that there'll be plenty of time and an opportunity to really discern this well.
Dr. Keating, thank you so much for spending time with us. It's a fascinating witness that you give, and it's great work that you're doing at the seminary. Thanks again for being with us.
At Ave Maria Mutual Funds, investing is far more than a numbers game. Investment performance is of utmost importance, and equally so are issues such as abortion and pornography. Chances are, these are important to you as well. To learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Fund's pro-life investing strategies and our investment results, the number is 1-866-AVE-MARIA, or visit www.avemariafunds.com. Ave Maria Mutual Funds can help you feel good about your investment decisions, smart investing, and Catholic values. Performance data quoted represents past performance, which is no guarantee of future results. Investment return and principal value are historical and may fluctuate so that the redemption value may be worth more or less the original cost. Prospective investors should read the prospectus carefully and consider the fund's investment objectives, risk, charges, and expenses carefully before investing. The prospectus, which can be obtained by calling 1-866-AVE-MARIA or online at avemariafund.com, contains this and other information. Distributed by Ultimus Fund Distributors, LLC. From real estate to plumbing, from pet care to dentistry, Catholic business professionals are finding increased business when advertising with the Catholic Business Pages. For more information about advertising or to get your free copy, go to CatholicBusinessPages.com or call 734-930-4536. Get better results when you advertise. That's CatholicBusinessPages.com or call 734-930-4536. CatholicBusinessPages.com is brought to you this week by Sterling Cleaning Services, serving Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb counties for over 21 years. Sterling Cleaning Services offers complete janitorial services from windows to floors, inside and out. We do it all. We service commercial businesses, industrial and medical buildings, schools, construction sites, and more.
Call Sterling Cleaning Services today at 1-800-453-1165. That's 1-800-453-1165. CatholicBusinessPages.com, your best choice.
Welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Dr. Edward Peters, sitting in for Al Cresta, who the running bet is he's probably ensconced in a library reading up for the next couple of weeks' shows. More power to you, Al. We just finished listening to Dr. Dan Keating, a member of Servants of the Word Community, an ecumenical organization, group of men committed to living the celibate life without seeking holy orders and without entering a religious life. If by any chance you missed part of that interview, or you'd like to go back and listen to it again, let me suggest that you go to the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. And while you're there, take today's poll question. Yesterday's poll question, as you probably recall, was whether the United States should lift the ban on offshore drilling. Now, there's all sorts of precautions here. It isn't technically a scientific poll, but it sure gives you a sense of the barometer of how people are reacting to that question. And yesterday's poll question was overwhelmingly 94% of you who voted said, yes, we should lift the ban on offshore drilling. Coming up in our next hour, we're going to be talking with two very interesting guests. First, Father Todd Lajeunesse. As we mentioned before, we're going to give him an impossible task. We're going to ask him to describe the typical seminarian. So if you are a seminarian, listen in. If you're thinking of being a seminarian or you know one, listen in. And then we're going to be talking about the world of Catholic youth blogging. Is it just for fun, or is it really making a difference in people's lives? I'll see you next hour.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
Bella, the critically acclaimed movie by Catholics, is now available at the Ave Maria online store as a DVD. How does one moment in one day change the lives of three people forever? Find out in this true love story. Bella, the People's Choice Award winner at the Toronto Film Festival, is inspired by a true story. Bella is a movie that delivers with a message and morals. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and find the online store to get Bella. That's AveMariaRadio.net or call 608-269-2622.
Summer can be a bummer when your car's on the fritz. You'd like to take a vacation, but when you start your engine, it goes instead of. You'd love to take a road trip, but your brakes are broken, your muffler won't, and your differential is, well, indifferent. You can't even drive to the corner store without your pistons getting in a brawl. The good news is Fozzie Auto Repair can unfritz the fritzes. In other words, they'll battle the boink, unbroke the brakes, muzzle the muffler, differentiate the differential, and bench the offending pistons. Remember, Fozzie's is the home of the $17.99 oil change and free maintenance exams at 30, 60, and 90,000 miles. Avoid the summer bummer, and don't hit the road this summer until your car is unfritzed and ready. Take it to Fozzie's Auto Repair. It's your car, their reputation. Stop and see them on Stadium just south of Jackson Road or call toll-free 800-895-8700. That's 800-895-8700.
Hey, Tom Lowy.
Hey, Sister Sarah, how you doing? What a nice day for a walk.
Sure is, but if you're not walking your dog,